Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 509-727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Even better, get notified of new shows as soon as they hit YouTube by subscribing to our YouTube channel. John McKay, we know everybody likes to look at you on that YouTube channel. And once again, I always like to thank John over there for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. So, John, how you been doing over there?
Keeping busy.
Yes, it's still decent weather out there. It's still home selling weather, I can tell you that much.
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, it was an easy one for me for the national crazy celebrity property that's for sale.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that know, last weekend was the Yellowstone premiere for Yellowstone's Back. The final season, but then it's technically the second half of the first season. Anyway, the premiere of Yellowstone was last weekend. So I thought, how close can I get you to a real life Yellowstone ranch? And I couldn't get you in Wyoming or Montana, but I found one in Arizona that recently hit the market. A 52,000 acre ranch in Arizona. It looks like a set from the movie of Yellowstone.
Wow.
If you need to channel your inner John Dutton, it's $42 million.
Wow.
It's a working cattle ranch. It's located in, I hope I'm saying this right, Seligman. And it last changed hands over 40 years ago. So it was the main home, like that massive, beautiful Yellowstone home. They have one of those on here, and that's where the ranch foreman gets to live. It was built in 1894.
Wow.
3,660 square feet of living space. It overlooks a gorgeous lake that they have on the property. And I loved how the listing said, if you're really interested and have proof of funds,
okay,
then we will send you a video about the property. There's not just a video available for us to look at. So very exclusive is what they're going after on this. So if you got an extra $42 million lying around looking to go to Arizona, there's a beautiful ranch for sale there. So, and no spoilers on Yellowstone. Okay.
No.
So I will not talk about the episodes yet, just in case someone's waiting.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, you know how I prepare for the show each week.
Yes. I tackle a lot of current topics and you look at what's happening and trending and things are coming up. And
people have been asking me all week the question. I get the same question three times, then that's the show topic for the radio. Well, this was like 20 times. And the topic that everybody was saying that kept coming up again and again and again is, Lance, now that Trump won, what does that look like for housing? You know, I know you compared the policies before the election. We talked about it. But now that we know for sure that's the situation we're dealing with, what's your take on housing? What are people saying is going to happen with housing? And so we're going to tackle a little bit of that today. And, you know, it's cautiously optimistic is how I would describe it, because there's going to be some issues, but there's also probably going to be some really good things for housing. But before I even get to that point, I do want to point out there was a really awesome news story. NBC News released a study earlier this week showing how applicable housing was in this election. And so what they did is they compared the shift in votes to Trump versus a housing difficulty index on how difficult a housing market is. So in general, if you look at across the country, the national median Trump increased from 2020 to 2024. He increased 3.1 percentage votes across the country. But if you look at the top 10% most difficult housing markets,
mm-hmm.
he shifted by a median of 4.5%, a whole 1.5% higher in those markets. And a third of those counties had races that were decided by less than 1%. So wow. the housing factor in difficult markets shifted the election red in many of those counties. And so I thought now the data, everybody, you know, the guys way smarter than me are starting to analyze all this data. And I was like, that is a very, very cool housing data number that I hadn't heard until just like 2 days ago. And so, yeah, it obviously, that's why we're talking about it today. That's why people are asking me these questions. And that is what is the landscape look like the next couple of years? I think the immediate thing that we have to look at and say is that we're probably not going to see drastic changes that take effect at least for a year and a half. I mean, okay. there's going to be some things that are controllable, like potentially influence on interest rates. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. But real estate, I mean, it's like the Titanic, right? Like the icebergs up there. Like you can't,
yeah.
it's not that easy to move. And so it takes a little while to move the needle. The first thing, and I kind of alluded to this a little bit last week, the first thing that I've seen and heard the most is that we can probably expect a push, especially now that he's got control of Congress, a push to take Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac back private. So before the housing crisis in 2010, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were what's called a GSE, and that's a government-sponsored enterprise.
Yes.
Okay, but then as we went into the great housing recession and all of the issues that were happening, those institutions went back into a government conservatorship. Okay, then there has been a lot of talk during Trump's administration, which obviously got stalled out when he wasn't reelected, is they were moving to try to get those privatized. And when they do that, if they do that, and I anticipate there'll be a big push to do that, I think that the potential is you get a lot more market competition in the lending sector. And so as they privatize those, as some of those regulations are loosened up a little bit, you're going to see more banks competing for that business. Right now, there's only a certain number of banks that can.
Mm-hmm.
And as more banks compete for that business, I think you're going to see different loan programs coming out because of that. One of the biggest talked about ones that we have not seen a lot, and I know this is crazy out there, and I'm a Dave Ramsey ELP. I'm not endorsing what I'm about to say, but I'm telling you what I think is going to happen. And that is, I think when that happens, you are going to see a bigger push for a 40-year mortgage in the United States. Because on top of that, that is going to be shown to people as a solution for housing affordability.
And I don't have
a huge amount of crystal ball data to confirm with this, but I would say that's one of the ones that we've seen inklings of, talked about in the industry, that we've heard about. And as we look into privatization like that, I think you're going to see with home values and what people can afford for payments, there will become a bigger push to have a 40-year mortgage. Now, obviously, you talk to financial experts, and like if you follow the Ramsey plan, he advocates a 15 because there sure is a lot less interest that you pay over time on that when you can leverage yourself that way. Now going to a 40-year mortgage, yes, it's payment specific, mm-hmm. but there's going to be an increase in interest rates. So
yes,
the first thing that I wrote down in my research and that what I feel has happened is that we will see a large number of new loan programs come out to deal with this issue that they're able to do in an era of less regulation. So additional loan programs, more products coming out. That's one of the changes that I think we will see. Now, the second one that I wrote down that is out there is that I think you will see what's called rural adjacent communities tending to thrive. So what do I mean by that? The closest thing in Tri-Cities that I can relate to that would be, for instance, Badger South, okay, 5 to 10 years ago, when there was nothing out there. Do you know where I'm talking about? The area I'm talking about, that Badger, where the Country Mercantile is, yeah, out there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So 10 years ago, there was nothing out there, and you have a master plan community come in out there in Badger South. That's what I would call a rural adjacent type of community. When you do that, they're going to be able to go in with less regulations, mm-hmm, less permitting issues, and make a big community master plan from the ground up. And it's going to come to less regulations, less permitting type of issues, and it's a different style of community than we're used to. And that is the fact you have a different mix of houses out there. You have some of the commercial, you have smaller lot sizes, you have, mm-hmm, duplexes, you have eightplexes out there. And now if you look out there in that community, you also have, they're building apartments that are 55 and older. There were some lower income housing type of apartments. So you've got a very eclectic mix of housing types all in a singular area that was able to be permitted much faster. So I think you're going to see what I call the rural adjacent communities come up more often, and even more so when you're adjacent to big cities like Dallas, Austin, Houston. And another reason why I bring this up is because now we know you've got Elon Musk, mm-hmm, put into a position of power in that government situation.
Yes.
And with that being done, he's been pushing in the housing sector. He was an investor in a modular home type building company called Boxed, where you basically, the walls, the ceilings, the roofs were produced in a factory.
And then brought to the site.
Brought to the site, assembled and built within a number of days versus months. And so then on top of that, from a Tesla version and standpoint, you've got, I've seen renderings coming out about pod housing. He's also done some of this around his plants outside of Austin, I believe, to where they're creating a new city with this type of housing. And so I think on top of just having the regulations to deal with, you've got to go back and you've got to look at the housing type and then now who is going to have influence over these policies. So I think that's a good example of what we can see happening. When we come back from the break, I'm going to tackle another topic that has to do, it's a hard connection that I don't think I've heard a lot of people make yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what does Trump have to do with 3D printing houses? We're going to talk about that when we come back.
Ooh, right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been talking about some real life scenarios on what we think is going to happen with Trump's housing policies, mm-hmm, as we move forward into this new market. Before I jump into a few more of those correlations, I want to hit you with some great new inventory. I've got my pick three this week. Pick number one, this is up off of Riata Road. It's a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, 2,700 square foot home on 1.6 acres. It's got a 2-bay shop with it, fully irrigated, access to Riata riding trails, lots of space to add more outbuildings if you wanted to. Inside, you've got open living room concept on the main level, wood floors, lots of natural lighting. Then the covered deck is just an awesome deck that runs the length of the house, which just gives you absolutely great views of the sunsets. Downstairs, there's a big family room, covered patio, perfect for barbecues and game day setups. And that's coming in shop, acreage, Riata, $630,000. So great little property out there. Pick number two, 2825 Copper Butte in Richland. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1795 square feet. This is out in Horn Rapids community. Fresh exterior paint. 10-foot tall ceilings in the great room, 9-foot throughout the rest of the house, oversized three-car garage. It's got the kitchen that opens up into the entertaining great room, gas fireplace. In that kitchen, it's just got granite countertops, large island, breakfast bar, full tile backsplash. Really, really nice, solid house. The spacious primary suite has patio access, coffered ceilings, great bathroom with dual sinks, large tile surround walk-in shower. And that's coming in priced out there at $523,900. And then pick number three, I'm going to take you all the way out to Othello. I've got a four-bedroom, three-bath, 2016 square foot, two-story home. Main level has laminate wood flooring, formal dining area. The kitchen has lots of storage space, prep island, breakfast bar, and walk-in pantry. And then the primary suite has dual closets with its own three-quarter bath. And that's coming in priced at $369,990. So a lot of value for your square footage there for sure. Well, before the break, we talked a little bit about what I expect to see happen with Trump's housing policies and how that's going to move forward. And one of the correlations to make, and I think a lot of times it's important to notate that it takes a while sometimes for these national type policies to get down to a local level where they're truly, where you can truly implement them in the housing market. So the best idea of that I can give you is we talk a lot. We've had the Home Builders Association president in here, and we've talked a lot about what's some of the holdup in building. What do you guys work on? And the number one thing they're always saying is permitting and regulations,
yeah,
and the cost of those permits. And then also following those regulations and what has to happen. So the best example that I can give for you of this is, for instance, 3D house printing. And when I say that, sometimes people are like, what are you talking about? Well, that technology has actually been around for, in I would say a commercially reasonable manner, has been around for over 5 years. And if you haven't seen the videos of it, I would check it out. I've been very, very fortunate. I was looking into it from an investment standpoint and actually from a real estate standpoint. Mm-hmm. To the point 4 years ago where we actually had a deposit on a machine. The problem that you run into with this is, and I've gone on site, I've gone down to Texas, I've gone to Florida, and I've watched these homes be completely basically framed and built within 3 days.
Ooh.
And it's a cement slurry mixture that does this. It's a very advanced robotic machine combined with that slurry that builds the walls, and then based off a very specific set of engineered blueprints to where, as the walls and stuff are being built, though, outlets have to be placed, runs, conduit runs have to be placed. Like, there's a process to it, but once you do it, it's very, very efficient. The problem is this can lower construction costs on that portion of the build by up to 30%. So now you're thinking we're doing something great for affordable housing. The first problem that you will run into is when I do that here in Tri-Cities and I call the building department and I want a building inspector to come out and inspect the construction. What do you think is going to happen, McKay?
Well, they are not going to approve everything.
Well, yeah. They've never even seen this before.
Yeah.
And they're
not going to know what to look for.
And then we're not sure if it meets local codes or even international codes for that matter. And so what happens
uncharted territory then.
Uncharted territory. And that's what I mean about some of this takes time. And some of this has to get down to the local level.
Yes.
So yes, we will see like big policy and soundbite clips that are awesome for the national level. And some direction maybe that will be helpful, but some of this has to be disseminated down to the local level and to where you have partnerships with these building departments. You've gone in and gotten approval for these type of things. I actually determined when we were looking into this with our investors, I think at the time the machine was like $1.5 million mm-hmm. for the machine.
Okay.
And we determined that we felt like it would take another $1 million to get the building department on board and the approvals done between education, permitting, changing some code, and the time involved with that, to where, guess what the decision was at the end of the day?
We'll pass.
Yeah, we're not, we can't do it yet in that in that time period. And that's likely why you haven't seen something like that here in Tri-Cities. It'll be here soon, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe some of this helps. And so I look at that and say, we're getting close on those things. And if we can get some push from the national level to push some of that down, get approvals at the local level, I think over the next 4 years, we are going to see some big, big leaps in the 3D printing, in the modular housing, in some of those approvals that we haven't seen in the past. And so I expect some of that to come to fruition because of the election. The next thing, McKay, are we going to talk about the touchy side of it?
Sure, why not? Because you know what a emotional and touchy-feely show we run here.
Okay, so this is, this is one, it's coming up in every single article about this subject with Trump's housing policy.
Okay.
And do not soundbite me and put little things in here that of what you think I'm saying. This is what was reported, though, all week, again and again and again. And here's some of the fear coming with Trump's policies that we're looking in the housing sector. The first thing that comes up is mass deportation of illegal immigrants. That is in every single article of how is this going to affect the housing market. Mm-hmm. Seattle Times this week came out with an article talking about this. Time Magazine did. CBS came out. They all were talking about this issue of if there is a mass deportation like that, they believe that that's going to cause construction delays and an increase in the cost of construction because of how construction is being done now with that labor force. In fact, according to, there was one of the stats that I pulled out that said that according to, it was the National Immigration Society said, they feel that 30% of the construction workforce are immigrants at this point. And if you pull that out of the workforce, there's going to be delays. How are you going to replace that? And you're going to replace that with higher wage jobs that will increase the cost of housing plus have the delays. Okay, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with what's going on with this because I don't know enough to know about all the specifics. But if those numbers are anywhere close to true, there's going to be some delays and it's going to be harder to get those homes built. However, if you listen to the rhetoric, that's the right word. If you listen to some of the rhetoric out there, there is a claim also that those illegal immigrants are taking housing that could also be used in the United States, driving up the cost of housing. So their take on it is that these two will like basically cancel each other out. And I don't believe any of it. I don't know if we have enough accurate numbers to know. I mean, obviously, I believe there's some on both sides of the table. But for this to statistically change the market from what I see and the subs that I see working on houses in Tri-Cities and stuff, I just don't know if it's going to be a big statistical change, but man, they like to write about it in the papers
Of course.
And so that one is yet to be known because I just really don't know. I feel that number's inflated and somebody's probably going to be driving around right now and they're like, Ken Moore's freaking living and got his head in the sand. Yeah. You know, and that's not, but from what I see and the subs and the houses I'm selling and the guys I'm talking to, I think that number's inflated a little bit to the point where I don't know if it will move the needle on it. But here's the argument. We have an issue with labor for home building. We're trying to build more homes. Then on top of it, we are going to add tariffs to goods and services coming in that these home builders are using to build homes. I don't think they're going to immediately be able to be ramped up and replaced I understand the long-term goal of that is to get those replaced with production here in the United States. But in the short term, I think we're going to have a labor problem building those houses somewhat. And if these numbers are correct, then we really are. But we're going to have somewhat of that problem. And then if we have tariffs on goods and services, guess what we're right back to with these increased costs of houses?
A housing shortage.
A housing shortage with inflation, with inflationary pricing that now the housing market is contributing to. So that's the danger side of what we're looking at here. Now, what happens when there's high inflation, John? What do they do with the rates?
If I remember, I think they raise them.
Big time. So they're now fighting inflation because of these problems that, have been created. Mm-hmm. And we're raising rates. Now, there's an argument out there. Of course, there's an argument out there. There's an argument out there that the president can have enough influence on the Fed to lower the rates and keep the rates down.
Yes.
Especially one that has the ear of the development and the housing and the real estate community.
Yes.
Which we do have. So, but that's a complete unknown. And these institutions are set up to be somewhat independent of each other. But that's the huge unknown. If those policies go the wrong direction in that case, we see inflationary pricing in the housing market. We're doing the opposite of providing affordable housing. Rates have gone back up, and it's another disaster. Now, I'm hoping none of that happens, but I want to give the flip side of what these policies, what people are talking about and saying about these policies. So those are ones to be careful of in those situations. And it's my gut feeling with rates. I mean, a lot of people have been asking what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Of course, in the first administration, Trump's first administration, I mean, it was like rates were down at 4%. I tell my kids all the time, you missed it. I was lucky to live through it and be a part of it. We might not see those rates there ever again. But if he does have any sort of influence and control, I can tell you from a practical standpoint with our team and our office and what's happening, the second those rates go below 5.9, our phone call volume increases and picks up. Deals start happening. We're doing more deals. More people are back in the affordable housing market again and looking at getting out of rentals and going into purchases. So if he does have any sort of influence and can keep those rates anywhere near 5.5 to 5.9, we are going to see the housing market, regardless of those other factors, I would say go into a boom cycle again in that indication. So there's a lot of positives out there. We are keeping track of it as it comes down the pipeline. Always super excited about what's going on in Tri-Cities. We've been working with a number of people this time of year that I talked about that are relocating, moving to the area, hiring on some of these big facilities is ramping up, and we're now seeing those employees start to show up and rent and purchase homes here in Tri-Cities. So yeah, it's a busy time regardless of what the calendar says.
Yes.
So we are kind of having our extended fall housing. Give us a call. Go to kenmoreteam.com. Shoot us a message. We would be glad to help you out with any of those questions. And regardless of what happens then, we're going to be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.